NDR Info. Nachtclub.
So, bei mir im Studio in der zweiten Stunde ist, wie gesagt, Jim Reid von der Jesus & Mary Chain. Es gibt ein neues Album, Damage and Joy, das erste neue Album von der Band seit 18 Jahren. Und wir hören das Stück jetzt All Things Pass. So, das war All Things Pass von der Jesus & Mary Chain, von dem neuen Album, Damage and Joy. Und bei mir im Studio ist, wie gesagt, Jim von der Band. Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
It's very good to see you. And it's been quite a long time since you've been in Hamburg, isn't it?
Well, I was just having this discussion on the way over. I can't remember how long it's been. So I guess
it has been a long time.
Yeah, I guess that means it's been a while.
I met your brother in 1994. Mm. So you were probably, just after that, you were probably here doing a concert, probably. That was probably 94, 95, might have been the case.
Right.
Anyway, so you haven't missed us, but we've missed you. And it's been 18 years, which is obviously a long time by anybody's standards. And how many years actually did pass without you possibly even seeing each other, actually writing any music together? Was there a long period where there was no artistic communication?
We broke up in 1997. I think it's pretty well documented that we didn't get along. It wasn't a clean break. Well, it was, but it was brutal. And, yeah, we didn't speak for quite a while. It was probably actually only about a year where we didn't have any communication at all. And then for about another year, it was basic. You know, we'd sort of kind of run into each other at the family household, the Reid family household at Christmas or something like that. And then bit by bit, it was my poor sister. She's like the United Nations of our family. She's the one that kind of brokered peace between us. And so Linda kind of patched things up between me and William. And then bit by bit, we kind of got back together. I mean, you know, as brothers before as a band. But there was always... It was never, I mean, the wounds were never completely healed. And I guess that kind of healing process is only really coming together now.
Right.
Yeah.
Ja, also die Band ging auseinander 1997 und es wurde damals ziemlich ausführlich dokumentiert, dass die Brüder nicht im Guten auseinandergegangen sind. Er redet von einer brutalen Trennung und ein ganzes Jahr hat es mindestens gedauert, bis sie überhaupt wieder miteinander geredet haben. Und dann gab es irgendwann eine Weihnachtsfeier innerhalb der Familie und mussten sie im Prinzip gezwungenermaßen hingehen. Und ihre Schwester Linda hat letztendlich dafür gesorgt, dass die beiden Brüder sich irgendwann versöhnt haben. Und er meinte, das war nur eine ziemlich oberflächliche Versöhnung erstmal. Es hat ziemlich lange gedauert, bis die Wunden wirklich geheilt sind oder geheilt wurden. Und ja, er meinte eigentlich erst jetzt, das ist richtig bemerkbar. Also, dass die beiden wirklich miteinander wieder gut klarkommen. And did it seem like a relief to you to actually get back writing together? What was that feeling? Was it relief? Was it excitement? Was it apprehension or a mixture of it all, do you think?
It was definitely a mixture of all of those things. The making of a record, I was particularly nervous about the idea of making a new Mary Chain record. I don't know why that was. Well, I do know why that was. It was a lot to do with the fact that the recording of Monkey was so utterly painful that I did not want to go back to that point. If it would have been just picking up the pieces as they were then, that would have been totally unacceptable. And I just don't know if my nerves could have taken that. And all the indications were that it would have been like that. We were still bickering about absolutely everything and anything. And I just didn't like the idea of block booking a studio for 2 months. Whereas, you know, day one, it would have been the same old bullshit that we'd left behind in the 90s, and then I was stuck there for 2 months having a nervous breakdown. So I kept putting it off, and then it just kind of got put on the back burner, and I don't know what happened. I guess that, you know, time passed, started to realise, well, we're no spring chickens, you know, let's face it, we're not getting any younger. If we are going to make this record, if we are going to make another record, it's going to have to be soon, or just let's forget it. So that was it. We sat down, we thought, if we're going to make a record, let's do it now, or let's just stop telling people that we're going to make a record. And so we just bit the bullet and got on with it.
Also Jim meint, dass sie eigentlich sehr lange gezögert haben, bis sie ein neues Album gemacht haben, weil er meinte, dass das letzte Album, Monkey, 97, war so ein schmerzhafter Prozess. Er meinte, es war so misslungen in vielerlei Hinsicht und so anstrengend, dass er hatte wirkliche Sorgen, überhaupt sowas zu wiederholen. Und er meinte, es machte überhaupt keinen Sinn, weiterzumachen, wo sie einfach aufgehört haben. Und er hatte überhaupt keine Lust, irgendwie ein Studio zu buchen für 2 Monate, um zu versuchen, wirklich das Lebensgefühl von damals wiederherzustellen. Er meinte, das könnte nicht einfach funktionieren. Aber dann sagte er, dass im Laufe der Jahre hat er dann tatsächlich bemerkt, also irgendwann muss es soweit sein. Die sind keine jungen Hühner mehr. Und wenn sie wirklich irgendwas Neues zusammen machen wollen, müssen sie dann einfach sich zusammenreißen und es einfach versuchen. So, we're gonna hear how it turned out, like one of the first attempt to actually write new music for 18 years. And is there a track which you'd like to hear now which you think is particularly representative of the fresh new start when it started really feeling good, when it actually started to really seem to all slot into place?
There's no one track that I would... Let me see the... I guess... I didn't expect this question, so you kind of I'm sort of scanning through the track list right now. I guess War on Peace, then, if you've put me in this position.
Right, okay.
But War on Peace, I think, was kind of a track that I wasn't sure how to go about doing, and I tried it. You know, as a solo project, I played it when I did solo shows on my own, and it was like a different song every time we played it. And I wanted to hear what William would bring to it, and it felt like the Mary Chain again. And I remembered the reasons why the Mary Chain was so special to both of us.
Right. Also dieses Stück will er jetzt hören, weil es so ziemlich repräsentativ ist für das neue Gefühl, das sie jetzt haben, wieder zusammenzuarbeiten. Es ist ein Song, den sie öfter gespielt haben, immer in verschiedenen Formen. Jedes Mal gab es eine neue Version davon oder es wurde immer unterschiedlich ausgearbeitet. Und er merkte irgendwann, dass das Stück einfach besonders eindrucksvoll ist und ist letztendlich eine Erinnerung daran, also warum The Jesus and Mary Chain damals so eine besondere Band war. Und er denkt, dieses Stück verkörpert im Prinzip dieses Gefühl. Hier ist also War and Peace von dem Album Damage and Joy von The Jesus and Mary Chain. Das ist War and Peace von dem neuen Album Damage and Joy von The Jesus and Mary Chain. Und Jim von der Band, Jim Reed, ist jetzt bei mir im Studio. And it's interesting that you've working together with quite a few female singers. Obviously, it's evident that you've worked together with quite a few here. And that seems to be like a throwback to me to like the Stone and Dethroned album. You know, there was Hope Sandoval who was involved in that and gave kind of fresh impetus, I think, to the band at the time. Was that a deliberate stance to actually get that kind of influence in to freshen things up in some way or to kind of in some way... further the process of renewal?
Not so much. It's just that we've always been a sucker for a duet. I mean, right back to the Nancy and Lee days. And, you know, Isabel Campbell was a natural choice, really, because of the stuff that she did with Mark Lanegan, and very much in the style of Nancy and Lee, too. So, I've always, even Sonny and Cher, I love the boy and girl standing at centre stage holding hands, like sort of staring into each other's eyes and then round to the camera. I got you, babe.
Right. So you'd have actually quite liked it if William had been a sister as opposed to a brother.
Well, that might have been a bit hillbilly if we'd have did that, though. Because you know? There were a couple of songs where we considered getting Linda in to sing, but then thought, no, you can't sing a love song with your sister. You know? It's a bit too deliverance for you. So, we just like duets. We always have, always have done.
Right. Which maybe we wouldn't have thought of when you think about the kind of music we're making right at the very beginning, like the first few singles in 1984 or whatever, you know. There was no sign of that really, was there?
Yeah, the weird thing is we liked duets even back then. I can't remember why we didn't think to do any, you know. It just never occurred to us. I mean, maybe...
Did you like Elton John and Kiki D?
Yeah, I love that. Right. Don't Go Breaking My Heart. Yeah, great. Absolutely love that. I'm a sucker for a good duet.
Right.
Always have been. So is William. We love all of that stuff.
Okay. So you're basically just quite romantic at heart, aren't you, at the end of the day?
Absolutely. Old romantics, that's us.
Ja, sie mochten schon immer Duets, deshalb haben sie auch diverse Gastsängerinnen auf diesem Album, zum Beispiel Isabel Campbell. Sie spielt, ja, sie singt auf ein paar Stücken und sie war natürlich früher bei Bell & Sebastian, eine andere schottische Band. Und er war sehr beeindruckt von ihrer Arbeit mit Mark Lanegan. Und er meinte, er mochte schon immer solche Lieder. Also Nancy und Lee damals fand er großartig, Sonny and Cher. Und er meinte, dass es, sie hatten sich sogar überlegt, ob sie nicht ein Duett mit ihrer Schwester singen, aber das wäre doch ein bisschen fehl am Platz gewesen. Die sind einfach alte Romantiker und dazu stehen sie. Because people in the early days had this idea of you being quite abrasive and almost vicious. And obviously that was a misnomer. And as the years gone on, we realize, you know, really what gentle and sensitive souls you really are.
Well, the thing about, I mean, when we were recording Psycho Candy, we were listening to all sorts of music. I mean, a big record at the time, and I forgot about this. I was doing an interview earlier and I remembered that, you know, a big record that we were listening to at the time we recorded Psycho Candy was Astral Weeks, right. Van Morrison. And, you know, at the time, we could never have recorded anything like that. We could barely play a guitar. So, you know, even if we'd had those songs, like songs that sounded like something from Astral Weeks, the version that we would have recorded would have sounded like Psycho Candy anyway, you know? So, you know, we were listening to different things, but we couldn't necessarily have put certain ideas across at that time.
You're just the quintessentials of punk rock illiterates at the time, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah. We've never really broke out in that, really, I suppose.
Ja, er sagte, dass die Vorstellung von der Band am Anfang war, dass die Band wirklich sehr rau war und ein bisschen primitiv und also richtig so Punk von der Attitüde her und ziemlich unkultiviert, aber meinte, das war eigentlich zwangsläufig so, weil sie einfach nicht anders konnten. Die waren bis zu dem Zeitpunkt einfach nicht musikalisch kompetent genug, um was anderes zu machen. Und als sie angefangen haben, als Psycho Candy das Debütalbum erschienen ist damals, dann hatten sie keine andere Wahl, weil sie musikalisch einfach nicht souverän genug waren. Und sie haben damals sehr viel unterschiedliche Musik gehört. Zum Beispiel Astral Weeks von Van Morrison war ein Lieblingsalbum von den beiden. Aber das hat man natürlich nicht bemerkt, weil ihre Musik einfach ganz anders war. Aber man meinte, sie hätten es nicht gekonnt, überhaupt solche Lieder wie Van Morrison damals zu schreiben. Aber die waren immer große Fans, also von wirklich sehr schöne Songwriting. Und er meinte, dass sie, obwohl sie natürlich jetzt inzwischen souveräner und kompetenter geworden sind, er meinte, im Grunde genommen sind sie immer noch ziemlich unkultiviert und ziemlich rau. So, wir hören jetzt das Stück mit Isabel Campbell jetzt, Song for a Secret, von dem Album Damage and Joy von The Jesus and Mary Chain. Das war also Song for a Secret, featuring Isabel Campbell, von dem neuen Album von The Jesus and Mary Chain, Damage and Joy. Bei mir im Studio ist Jim von der Band. It's interesting when it comes down to your lyrics. I think you stayed consistent in that respect. I've always thought your lyrics sound really interesting and never really been quite sure how important your lyrics really are. On the one hand, they seem to be saying something quite profound, but there's also something kind of superficial rock and roll about them. It's kind of like you seem to, in some way, yeah, tread a fine line between the two, being sort of profound and being frivolous.
Well, I mean, I think most people do that, and I think that, you know, and it depends, it differs from, you know, from song to song. You know, one song, it might be, lyrically, it might be a lot more important. I mean, I think something like, what was the song that we played earlier that I said? Yeah, War on Peace. I mean, there's nothing, you know what I mean? Every line in that is from the heart, you know what I mean? It's that's a song about, you know, being in utter despair, really, you know, and there's nothing I don't mean in that song, basically. But there are other songs where, you know, to be honest with you, you know, one line might rhyme with another and it sounds good. And that I'm not saying that doesn't make it disposable, Because the thing about pop music that I hate, that people just think that you can't just make a song that rhymes and that makes it throwaway and somehow trash. I mean, some of my favourite lyrics ever written were written by Syd Barrett. And to this day, I have no idea what he's on about in a lot of the songs. But they not only sound profound, but they are utterly nonsense, but they are profound. Because it's a window into a very unconventional mind. And you don't get that very often. I'm not saying that me or William are in any way as like sort of profoundly talented as Syd Barrett was. But what I'm saying is, like, it's too easy to judge, you know, what a song is all about based on the conventions of what people think songwriting should be and often isn't.
Yeah. So do you actually think about yourselves in terms of artistic merit? Do you actually compare yourself to people like Van Morrison or Syd Barrett? Do you give that idea a bit of a wide berth?
No, we do it and other people can talk about it. I mean, what we do, we just have a bit of fun doing. And hopefully it means something to some people. I mean, I guess that, you know, we're having this conversation like 33 years after we first made a record.
For a reason.
So we're doing something right, you know. it means something to some people.
Yeah.
And that's, to me, that's job done, you know.
Sure. Also, Jim meint, dass seine Texte sind teilweise tiefsinnig und tiefgründig und sehr nachdenklich und sie kommen vom Herzen. Und oft sind sie wirklich so ein Spiegelbild für seine Verzweiflung, seine seelische Verzweiflung. Aber er sagt, dass es auch durchaus möglich ist, dass er also sehr frivole Texte schreibt oder die gar keine Bedeutung haben. Also manchmal muss sein Lied gar keine richtige Bedeutung haben. Es reicht, wenn irgendwelche ein paar Zeilen sich einfach reimen. Und er meinte, das heißt nicht unbedingt, dass es deshalb Wegwerfprodukt ist. Er meinte, wer sagt, dass Popmusik immer von großer Bedeutung sein muss, aber es muss auch nicht unbedingt dann gleich das Gegenteil sein, nur weil es nicht so tiefgründig ist. Es ist nicht gleich Wegwerfprodukt. Und er meinte, ein Stück wie War and Peace, das wir am Anfang gehört haben, er meinte, das ist ein Beispiel für seine Ernsthaftigkeit. Aber es gibt andere Beispiele, wenn er nicht so ernsthaft drauf ist. Und er nennt Syd Barrett als ein Vorbild. Er meinte, er ist ein extrem talentierter Songwriter gewesen. Aber er meinte, er weiß immer noch nicht eigentlich, was die Texte von Syd Barrett bedeuten sollte. Aber es war trotzdem sehr wichtig, was Syd Barrett geschrieben hat. Und er konnte natürlich die Fantasie des Hörers anregen. Und das war von großer Bedeutung. Er meinte, er würde sich nie trotzdem mit Syd Barrett messen. Und er denkt auch nie darüber nach, wie wichtig The Jesus Mary Chain wirklich ist. Er versucht nie, Bilanz zu ziehen, was das betrifft. Er meinte, wenn wir uns jetzt nach 33 Jahren über die Band unterhalten, dann müssen sie schon irgendwas richtig gemacht haben. Und er denkt, das ist schon ein Beweis dafür natürlich, dass die Band einen gewissen Stellenwert hat und dass sie schon eine Bedeutung haben dann für viele Leute. So, what would you like to hear next from the album? Is it a track which is particularly profound or particularly frivolous which you'd like to choose now to,
well,
as a case in point?
I don't have my reading glasses on right now, so hold on. I would quite like to hear Always Sad.
Always Sad, okay.
Because I think it's one of those, it's another duet. It's me singing with them.
Are we meant to know Bernadette Denning?
It's William's other half.
Right.
And she's not a singer. She is a singer because she did a very good job. What I mean is she's not in a band, she's not in the music business, and she's got a lovely voice, and I think it's a strong contender for Jesus and Mary Chain's single.
Right, OK. We haven't actually heard the first single yet. Amputation is the first single from the album, isn't it? We'll have to get round to that.
Right.
Yeah, but well, this is going to be the second single.
Maybe.
We're jumping the gun a little bit. Okay.
It's up for grabs at the moment. I need to sit down and talk to my brother about that. But,
okay.
But that's a possibility.
So, wir haben das Stück Always Sad jetzt mit Gastgesang von Bernadette Denning. Und ich kannte die Sängerin vorher nicht. Kein Wunder. Es ist die Freundin von William. Und sie ist überhaupt keine Berufssängerin. Sie hat noch nie irgendwas mit Musik zu tun gehabt. Kann aber schön singen. Und haben gedacht, es war eine ganz natürliche Wahl. Und er denkt, dass das Stück durchaus kommerzielles Potenzial hat und könnte vielleicht die nächste Single sein. Also hören wir jetzt Always Sad von The Jesus Mary Chain, von dem Album Damage and Joy. Das war's Always Sad von dem Album Damage and Joy von The Jesus and Mary Chain. Do you measure yourself with contemporaries in any way? I mean, do you feel more in common with young musicians now you're starting again, or do you tend to think of in terms of people more or less your own age? Or does that not seem to have any influence on the way you think or in the way you get motivated to do what you do?
I have to be honest, I don't listen to a lot of new music. My record collection is big. I don't need any more records. You know, I've got it covered, I think.
Okay.
And whenever I hear new bands, I tend to kind of just compare them to old bands. You know, I kind of think, well, you know, I can hear Joy Division, I can hear The Doors, I can hear The Banshees. And I kind of think, well, there's nothing wrong with that. But I've heard it. You kind of think that if you stay tuned long enough, you've heard it all.
Do you think there actually is less innovation than there used to be then?
No, I think that there's a cycle, and if you stay tuned long enough, you've heard the whole cycle. There's very, 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 very few bands that come along and bring something brand new. But it's always been that way. I'm sure that when the Mary Chain came around, there were the old guys going, oh, Christ, it's the Velvets, it's this, it's that.
Yeah.
And, you know, yeah, fair enough. But, you know, now I'm the old guy, and I'd rather just go and listen to my few thousand albums that I've already got. And if there's a band that I absolutely must hear, you know, somebody will come knocking on my door going, you've just got to listen to bloody blah, you'd love them. And, you know, and if that happens, then great, but I can live without new music.
Okay. Also Jim sagt, dass er sich mit neuer Musik kaum beschäftigt. Er meinte, er hat schon eine riesige Plattensammlung und das reicht ihm. Und was er schon feststellt, ist, wenn er neue Musik hört, dann merkt er nur, dass es eigentlich irgendwie so mit der Vergangenheit verbunden ist. Er hört dann Bands wie Joy Division raus oder The Doors. Und er meinte, das ist wahrscheinlich immer so gewesen. Es ist ein Zyklus. Und wenn man genug Musik hört über genügend Jahre, dann merkt man, dass es das alles schon vorher gegeben hat. Und er denkt, dass es liegt in seinem Alter einfach, dass er glaubt, alles schon gehört zu haben. Und als sie damals angefangen, Anfang der 80er Jahre, dann haben die älteren Herrschaften bestimmt gesagt, ach ja, The Jesus Mary Chain ist nicht originell, klingt nur wie Velvet Underground. Und er meinte, das ist auch völlig okay, weil es ist natürlich das, was man im Prinzip was man sich angeeignet hat als Hörer im Laufe der Jahre. Und deshalb hat er nicht das Gefühl, dass er unbedingt neue Musik hören muss. Also wenn jemand ihn wirklich dazu zwingen würde, wenn jemand ihm sagen würde, ja, das musst du unbedingt hören, dann ist er auch bereit, das zu tun. Aber meistens ist er dann nicht sonderlich wirklich beeindruckt, also mit dem, was er dann hört. I think it's important. I was a bit apprehensive when I got the album. I thought, well, what am I going to do if I don't like it? And what, you know, if it's going to, what am I going to do if it sounds rather staid and just lazy or just not, or apathetic? And it does actually sound to me like quite a young band. I do actually think you've quite successfully managed to recapture the spirit. And I think, to my mind, it goes back to, it seems like a natural progression from the Stone and Dethrone album rather than anything else, which was my favourite a Mary Chain album.
Yeah,
I think most people have other favourite Mary Chain albums, I think, but mine was always Stone in His Throat.
Well, that's great to hear you say that, because I think it might be my favourite Mary Chain album, and it always pisses me off that it gets so overlooked. To be fair, you know, it came out at a time where the Mary Chain were kind of struggling to get the time of day anyway. But, you know, we were struggling personally. Personally and with each other, me and William, but the music didn't suffer, and that's one of the best. That's the best record that I think we made. It didn't sell at the time it came out. It's the time that the Mary Chain seemed like yesterday's news, but it often gets overlooked. When people look back on the Mary Chain's career, some people don't even mention it when they talk about your back catalogue. Is it as if it didn't exist?
It's just like the songwriting was particularly strong, I thought. Mm-hmm. There wasn't a weak track on it.
No, I agree.
I remember I was sent a cassette by Warner, like a promotional cassette, and I listened to it for months in the car.
Yeah.
It was like my favourite cassette in the car for ages.
Okay.
And it kind of, and like, if you heard it like 100 times, there was still kind of new details you found out. Mm. You know, it's kind of like, it was like there's something new to it each time.
That's, yeah, yeah.
It seemed to be, on the one hand, it seems to be quite simple, but there's lots of kind of loving detail to it, which I think. And it reminds me of that in quite a lot of ways, because it sounds mature and it sounds meticulous, but it still sounds rock and roll, you know what I mean? It's like, it's not too fussy.
Yeah. I mean, that is a perfect description of it. It's like it's picking up from where left off.
So jetzt hören wir uns Stück von dem besagten Album Stoned and Dethroned, mein Lieblingsalbum von der Jesus Mary Chain, und auch Jims Lieblingsalbum von der Band von damals. 1994 ist das Stück Dirty Water. Das war also Dirty Water von der Jesus Mary Chain von dem Album Stoned and Dethroned, 1994. Yeah, so did you ever doubt that you would be able to renew yourselves as effectively as have you done so?
Yeah, we had doubts. I guess one of the reasons why another reason why I was kind of not that keen to get back in the studio was that I was scared of failure. I was scared that maybe we couldn't hack it. So yeah, that was something that we had to look at, you know. And I think the only thing about that is I think that would have became apparent very early on, and we could have just like called it a day. We could have gone in for a couple of weeks and said, look, this is just not working out. But no, it didn't feel that way at all. It felt like there was a point to doing it. Right. I mean, to be honest, I didn't know whether anybody else was going to be interested. All the way through it, I was thinking, I like it. Will anybody else? That's what I kept thinking. Will this mean anything to anyone? And that remains to be seen, so fingers crossed.
Also Jim ist schon der Meinung, dass sie, ja, er hatte schon Bedenken, überhaupt jetzt wieder mit der Band anzufangen, weil er dachte, was ist, wenn sie das gar nicht richtig hinbekommen, wenn das die Ergebnisse einfach nicht befriedigend sind. Aber er hat sich damit vertröstet, dass er, wenn es dann nicht geklappt hätte, wenn es schiefgegangen wäre, dann hätte es wahrscheinlich sehr früh bemerkt, während des Aufnahmeprozesses. Und dann hätten sie natürlich abbrechen können und hätten sagen können, okay, was soll das jetzt? Es funktioniert nicht. Und er hatte auch Bedenken, ob vielleicht überhaupt irgendjemand sich noch für die Band interessieren würde. Ob es überhaupt einen Sinn hätte, ist das Interesse noch da? Und er ist anscheinend jetzt beruhigt. Also er denkt, dass der kreative Prozess hat funktioniert. Und er denkt, dass es immer noch genügend Leute gibt, die sich für die Band interessieren. Were you maybe apprehensive in the sense that, you know, people connected you, they tended to associate with you with quite wild behavior when you were younger, which tends to be quite positive when it comes down to the creative impetus, because you were quite unsettled characters at the time, and that probably gave you the creative edge. It's a bit of a kind of rock and roll cliche. But now you're probably more settled. You mentioned your kids from watching Mary Poppins before we went on air, you know, so that's not quite the sort of the Jesus and Mary Chain we're thinking of in 1984. You probably weren't watching Mary Poppins with your kids in 1984.
No, that's true, but having said that, I mean, particularly William's home life around about like the sort of mid-80s period was like incredibly like sort of slippers and tea and biscuits. I mean, we used to go on tour in America, and William used to tape like EastEnders, Coronation Street and The Bill, and he'd get back and he would disappear for like 2 months just watching all of these like the back episodes of his soaps. William was actually quite a kind of a homebod back then.
You were the wild card.
Well, I mean, what I'm saying is, like, you know, it wasn't all sort of like a rock and roll debauchery even back then. And you know, and even now, you know, it's like, yeah, we are older, we should be wiser, but I guess it's all kind of like where your heads are, really. I don't feel like I'm that settled, let alone settled down.
Okay. So that just stays with you. The innate artist just always retains his artistic streak, or that kind of lack of...
I don't feel any different. I'm 55, and I don't feel any different from the way I felt when I was 25.
Right. Which, in the artistic sense, is a good thing.
Yeah.
Maybe...
I kind of thought that I'd have all the answers by this stage of the game, but I'm starting to realise that there are no answers.
Right, okay. Ja, ich fragte, ob er vielleicht nicht ein bisschen besorgt war von den Gedanken, dass sie vielleicht so gut bürgerlich geworden sind und dass sie vielleicht jetzt im Alter nicht mehr so kreativ sie hätten nicht so einen kreativen Biss wie vielleicht wie früher, weil es war sehr auffallend früher, als sie jünger waren, dass sie ihre Kreativität war irgendwie an, ja, ganz wichtig für sie im Sinne von so ziemlich wilden Verhalten. Also die waren schon ziemlich so unkonventionelle Typen, die auch so ziemlich unausgeglichene Menschen waren. Und das hat geholfen, was den kreativen Prozess betrifft, dass sie nicht besonders stabil waren. Und ich denke, dass jetzt sind sie vielleicht einfach stabiler und deshalb ist es schwieriger, so kreativ zu bleiben. Aber das hat er bestritten. Er meinte, bei ihm hat sich eigentlich nichts geändert. Und er meinte, William war eigentlich damals also ziemlich gut bürgerlich und er hat irgendwie Seifenoper aufgezeichnet, wenn sie auf Tour waren. Und die nachträglich dann geguckt nach einem Konzert. Und er hat irgendwie Hausschuhe immer getragen und Tee getrunken und Kekse gegessen. Und er war ziemlich bieder. Und es war auf keinen Fall immer nur diese Rock'n'Roll-Dekadenz. William war eher so der Brave. Und Jim sagt, dass was ihn selbst betrifft jetzt, er meinte, es hat sich nichts geändert. Er meinte, dass er glaubte, er würde jetzt mit 55 wissen, also wo es wirklich lang geht. Und er hätte irgendwie Antworten auf grundsätzliche Fragen des Lebens. Er meinte, er tappt eigentlich immer noch im Dunkeln. Und er meinte, das ist deshalb nicht gerade schwierig, dann kreativ zu bleiben und diesen Biss zu haben. So, are we going to hear a track to finish off maybe, which is maybe a good example of your creative impetus, which you managed to retain through not finding any spiritual answers and stuff.
Okay, let me see now. Okay, let me have a look. It would be better if I had my glasses, but never mind. Let's try one of my brother's songs. What about Mood Rider?
Because we're usually left in the dark, really, about who actually writes the songs. We just assume that you both write the songs together all the time.
But we very rarely write songs together, to be honest with you. But we do it with that. That's kind of like with B-sides. We tend to spend time writing together. But mostly when we do an album, we come in with a bunch of songs ready written.
Okay.
And it's like, you know, we can add bits to each other's songs and stuff.
Okay. So, wir hören jetzt zum Schluss Mood Rider. Das ist ein Song, der sein Bruder geschrieben hat, also William. Und er meinte, dass sie eigentlich selten zusammen Songs komponieren. Natürlich, sie treffen sich dann im Studio und jeder bringt seine Ideen mit. Und nachher, dann ist es eine Kombination von den beiden. Also, die arbeiten die dann zusammen aus. Oh, my phone going again. It's ridiculous. Sorry. I should have left it in the studio. But we can edit that out, yeah. Do you think that everything is all clear now between you and your brother now? I mean, if there was tension in the past, there's always the possibility that the relationship might deteriorate again, or have you become too mature then?
There's always that possibility. I mean, who knows? I mean, I have no idea what the future brings. Does anybody? At the moment, things seem to be going quite well between us. And this time next year, maybe he'll have done something so unspeakably horrible, or maybe it'll be me. You know, it's not. Yeah, it's not always his fault.
Yeah.
But who knows?
Yeah. And so, I mean, it's not likely to be the case that when you come on tour in April that you're going to have like short and violent sets. Like you used to. You're not going to smash everything up and beat each other up and destroy rock and roll in the process, whatever.
We haven't done those kind of shows for quite a few decades, so I think you're safe to say that won't happen.
Right, okay. And they're a bit longer than they used to be, aren't they now? It won't be 20 minutes.
20 minutes. Again, that's back
1984.
1984.
You only had about five songs anyway, didn't you?
Yeah, that was it.
People thought you were trying to provoke people. You actually had four songs or five songs.
We had about half a dozen songs, which were about a minute and a half each, so there you go.
Okay. And just one more question. Could you going back to like 30 years, like to when you first started, was there a moment in time, like in the 80s, when you realised you were proper songwriters, you actually were going to write proper songs and be really effective songwriters in the tradition of whoever, you know, be it Van Morrison or whatever, you know what I mean?
I think we always felt pretty good about the tunes we had. I mean, I remember like when we were doing the shows before the release of the album Psycho Candy, and I remember being aware of the fact that live we weren't putting these songs across, that it was more of a kind of a spectacle what was going on stage, and it was more about us just not feeling our way around. Couldn't really play. We were learning how to play in front of an audience, basically, and that, you know, we were just learning how to be in a band on stage. But I remember thinking, these songs, these people don't get it. These songs are pretty good, and that they're really only going to get it when we actually make a record. And I remember at the time thinking that we'd have to make the record to put the songs across. But I always felt pretty good about the songs we had.
Okay. Ja, als Sie angefangen haben, waren Sie dafür bekannt, dass Sie eine richtige Punk-Attitüde hatten. Und es gab Leute, die gedacht haben, man kann sie gar nicht ernst nehmen. Die hätten gar keine richtigen Lieder. Aber er meinte, dass Sie immer wussten, dass es anders war. Und es war am Anfang, gerade Ihre Live-Gigs waren ein Spektakel. Auch ziemlich gewalttätig und auch nur sehr kurz. Und dabei haben Sie Equipment zertrümmert auf der Bühne und bekamen einen sehr schlechten Ruf am Anfang Ihrer Karriere. Aber er wusste, dass wenn Sie ein Album gemacht haben, das Album Psycho Candy, dass man die Leute überzeugen könnte, dass sie richtige Songs zustande kriegen würden. Und daran hat er nie gezweifelt. So in other words, in some sense, nothing's changed since 1984.
You know,
in that
much.
Sense.
Yeah.
There you go. Okay, well, thanks very much for talking to me. It was good to see you. And hope to see you again soon. And well, look forward to your concerts coming up, in April.
Thank you very much.
Good luck with the album. So, zum Schluss hören wir jetzt Mood Rider von dem Album Damage and Joy, das neue Album von The Jesus and Mary Chain. Und bei mir im Studio war Jim von der Band. Das war der Nachtclub mit Paul Baskerville. Ich wünsche euch eine gute Nacht.
NDR Info. Nachrichten.